I want to share a story. I'm going to read you a story of a real man. He's not pretend. And we're going to put his picture up. Brett, could you put his picture up real quick? So we know who we're talking about. And I want to read you the story. This guy is a chaplain in the Sudanese military. He is a Christian believer. And as we gather as men, I read this story to our kids last night at dinner. And as we gather as men, I think this guy is a pretty amazing example of what it is to be a man of God. So I want to share a little bit of a story. And he's going to kind of be one of our challenges for tonight as we gather as men and as we head out. But listen to the story. It says, during his deployment, Santino was called by his commander to go out and search for the enemy because there were reports that they were coming for blood. During his patrol, he spotted two scouts that had been sent by the enemy. Santino waited for them and was able to capture them. During the interrogation of the scouts, it was told that they were a part of a much larger force of men, approximately a battalion in strength, plus an additional 700 Arab mercenary fighters. Once again, Santino, keep in mind by himself, was sent out and came back with five more enemy prisoners. He was sent out on a third mission and captured two additional scouts. His commander asked him how he was able to keep capturing these men, and Santino replied that it was by the power of God. The commander pondered Santino's life because it was so different from any other man in the unit. The commander thanked him for walking with Christ and said, "Your faith will be what saves our men." With the intelligence that was collected from the three groups of prisoners, Santino's unit was able to get the upper hand in the battle and give the enemy a resounding defeat that sent them into full retreat. His commander called Santino again and said, "I'm sending you on an important mission because of your skill." Again, his skill was because of God. "You will be needed to protect the lives of our men." Santino's unit was sent into a dense forest with every kind of insect that is known to feast on man. While there was a lot of wild game in the area, they were difficult to spot in the dense vegetation. This made finding food impossible, and the men were extremely hungry. So one of the men went out hunting. He traveled many miles through the difficult terrain, and because of the dense vegetation, he lost his bearings. After many hours of hunting, he spotted a gazelle and shot it. Because the sun was setting, he did not have time to find his way back, so he laid down to sleep with the dead gazelle next to him. During the night, a lion was drawn by the smell of the dead animal. The lion grabbed the gazelle and ran off into the forest with it. The man was fortunate that he had made the kill, or the lion would have most likely killed him instead. By morning, a search party was sent out to find the missing man. Santino and his group of men searched all through the day until Santino came across the lion tracks. He saw that the tracks had crossed with the missing man's footprints. They did not know if the man was dead or alive, so they began to track the lion to find out if he had been killed. Santino and his men searched for 3 days. At night, they tried to protect themselves from the insects, but their efforts were in vain. Their bodies were nearly eaten alive. They finally picked up the tracks of the lost soldier and were able to get back to their base safely. When Santino got back to the base, he said that his body was covered with insect bites, too many to count. It amazed me what these men were willing to go through to retrieve one lost man. Giving up was never a thought until they knew if their fellow soldier was dead or alive. One cannot help but parallel the story of leaving the 99 to find the one. When Santino reported back to his unit, he was informed that his village had been attacked and destroyed. His home had been set on fire. He asked if his wife and children had survived the attack. His commander did not know the fate of Santino's family, but released him to go and search for them. When he discovered they were not at his house, he went to search for them in the bush. After 7 days of searching, he found his wife and his children, the youngest being 18 months old. They had been hiding for over a week without food. Santino was able to get them to a place of refuge and then had to return to his unit. As Santino was narrating this journey, he informed me that his wife had just called to let him know that his youngest daughter was sick and could no longer eat. His wife tried to take her to the doctor, but because she did not have the ability to pay for treatment, the little girl was refused admittance. Her condition had become critical. Santino said that he believed that she would most likely die. Then he said, "No matter what happens, I will remain faithful to the Lord." There was no hint of resentment in his voice. You would think that he might say, "God, can you not see all I am doing for your kingdom?" Instead, his words were, "The mission of being a chaplain is too important. Our faithfulness determines the difference between heaven and hell for the lost." I sat back and just looked at him. Here was a man who had truly counted the cost. I immediately dispatched men to send the money. This is, now the person who's writing this is the founder of this ministry that actually trains these chaplains in Sudan. I immediately dispatched men to send the money needed for his daughter's treatment. We were able to get her admitted to the hospital, but because of her condition was so fragile, she died 3 days later. After going home and taking care of his family, Santino returned to the front lines with no bitterness in his heart. He trusts that it is the Lord who gives and takes away. Pretty amazing story. So here's a man, just like us, but a man of extreme faith upon the Lord and commitment. So we're going to get in to chapter 1 of Nehemiah tonight, and we're going to look at Nehemiah. And we're going to look at a man that was faithful to seek the Lord. And we're going to see faithfulness pay off. And the Lord loves it when men especially take steps of faith. And maybe, hopefully in the next coming weeks as we go through this series, this book, God is going to be presenting you with, if he already isn't, opportunities to step out in faith. And my prayer for all of you is that as those opportunities arise, you would, like Santino, say, "I'm going to go. I'm going to step out. I'm going to do it, because God will be faithful if I'm faithful to follow. God will always be faithful to meet us when we step out into faith." Amen? Amen. All right. Verse 1, chapter 1, Nehemiah. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. "Now it happened in the month of Chislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Susa, the citadel, that Hanani, one of my brothers, came with certain men from Judah. And I asked him concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived in exile, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, 'The remnant there in the province who had survived the exile is in great trouble and shame. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are destroyed by fire.' As soon as I heard these words, I sat down," verse 4, "and wept and mourned for days, and I continued fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, 'O Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant that I now pray before you day and night for the people of Israel, your servants, confessing the sins of the people of Israel, which we have sinned against you. Even I and my father's house have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, and the rules that you commanded your servant Moses. Remember the word that you commanded to your servant Moses, saying, 'If you are faithful, or if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the peoples. But if you return to me,'" verse 9, "'and keep my commandments and do them, though your outcasts are in the uttermost parts of heaven, from there I will gather them and bring them to the place that I have chosen to make my name dwell there. They are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name, and give success to your servant today and grant him mercy in the sight of this man.' Now I was a cupbearer to the king." All right, so Nehemiah, we kind of gave an overview, quick overview last week of kind of the Old Testament. We started kind of where Israel and Judah had split, become two nations, the north and the south. And we find Nehemiah here. This is after the Babylonians had been taken over and captured in a sense. And the Persians here are in rule. And Nehemiah, we don't know too much about Nehemiah. We don't know much about his youth. This is kind of where we pick up on Nehemiah. Nehemiah, we know this, was from Judah, and we know that he had found himself in a pretty prominent position in the palace. He was the king's cupbearer. Now, I don't know about you, but that would not be probably a desired job that I'd want, you know, we would seek after. You know, if Craigslist, if you're looking for employment, you ever see cupbearer, you know, avoid that job. His job was literally a cupbearer, was to taste the king's food and drink his wine or his beverage to confirm if it was not poisoned or not. So if Nehemiah croaked on the spot, the king knew, okay, I'm not going to eat tonight. I won't touch that food. So it was, you know, a job that you didn't know if you were going to die that night, if you, you know, and it was a job that probably you would want to really, you'd want to make amazing friendships with everybody else that worked in the palace, for the reason being of hearing, is something going to happen to the king? Somebody going to try to do something to the king? Because if somebody's going to try to do something to the king, that means most likely you're going to be affected by it because you're the cupbearer. So he found himself in this position and as the cupbearer for the king. And as well, he would have been a man that had to have been a man of loyalty and faithfulness to begin with, because a king would have to trust his cupbearer to know that his own cupbearer might not try to poison him or trick him. So he was a man that was loyal, obviously faithful, and was put in this position for probably that reason. Here's something we know. This is what's amazing, and I want to kind of hit on a few things before we get into our groups tonight. But Nehemiah, we see this. In verse 2, we see that one of his brothers came back with certain men from Judah. And I want you to really hold on to this statement in verse 2. And this is Nehemiah in the first person telling us this story. And in verse 2, Nehemiah, it says that he asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the exile, and concerning Jerusalem. Okay, so keep note of this, that Nehemiah asked. He asked the status of what was going on with the exiles and what was happening in Jerusalem. He wanted to know. He was interested in finding out what the current state was and what was going on and how the people were. So we know that Nehemiah had an interest enough to ask and inquire. Okay, so hold on to that thought, because it's going to connect us through verse 4 and show us truly what kind of heart Nehemiah had for the people. Verse 3, it says this, "And they said to me, 'The remnant there in the province who had survived the exile is in great trouble and shame. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are destroyed by fire.'" So here's what you need to see here. Nehemiah is asking for a report, and what is given back to him? Bad news, right? And here's the thing I love about this report. I don't love that it's bad news, but I love the fact that these guys obviously do not hold anything back. You know, they don't paint a better picture than what is really, really happening in Jerusalem. They don't try to, you know, smooth it over and say, "Hey, you know what, Nehemiah, it's not as bad as it sounds. It's going to be okay." No, they come to him and say a few powerful things. They say, "The remnant there who has survived, they are in great trouble and shame." So right off the bat, these guys are clearly telling Nehemiah the people are in a horrible place. They're in a terrible place, physically, spiritually, emotionally, and then to go on and say that they're in great shame. So these guys are giving this report, and then they go on to tell them that, oh, and by the way, the walls, the gates have all been torn down and burned, and the city is unprotected, and the city is vulnerable, and these people are in a horrible place, a horrible state. So here's one challenge I want to give you guys tonight. And as you get into your groups, you're going to obviously go through your homework, but these are some things to talk about as well in your groups. But here's something that is so important for us, especially as men. We have to be willing to not only ask, but be willing to give an honest report, but we also have to be willing to ask others to give us an honest report of ourselves. Very important. A lot of us, not only men, but women as well. Some of you may say amen that are married. You may agree to this and say, "That's my wife." But women as well, and men, we do not like to look within. And even worse, having somebody else look within. But here's the thing is what's so important is here this report is given. It's an honest report of what is happening and what has happened, and it gives Nehemiah something to respond to. Now, if these guys would have said, hey, you're doing great. God bless you, brother. It's all good. It's all good in the hood. Nothing's happening. The gates are strong. The walls are built up. You know, hey, we were there, and it was beautiful, great place to vacation and take the family to. And these guys say, no, it's bad. It is bad. They give an honest report. And as men, it is so crucial to have other men around us that will give an honest report. If you are a person, if you're a man that's drawn to having yes men around you, you're in a dangerous place. Any leader of a corporation, any leader of a ministry or a church that strategically places yes men around them is a dangerous place to be in. People that'll say, yes, you're great, you're doing great, wonderful, wonderful, nothing's wrong. I'm never going to call you out on anything, never going to show anything to you that you need to see. Or it is so crucial to have people who will honestly, in love and in hope of our best, in our best interest, they would give us an honest, thorough report. We need that in our lives. So important. Now, we also need to be that for other people. But if you do not have somebody in your life today that can give you an honest report, and here's the thing, if you're married, we know this, our wives are very good at giving us those honest reports. Would you agree to that? They're good at it. They are. My wife's good at giving me an honest report. But we need men, other men in our lives that will give us an honest report other than our wives. Other than our wives, that will not be afraid to say, hey, the walls, they're broken. The gates have been burned. You've let a lot of garbage into your life. You've let a lot of stuff into your life. You are in a place that is terrible and shameful. We need reality. You know, and what's sad is with society, and especially on TV, everything's based on reality, reality, reality. Let's have this reality show. Let's have, you know, reality wives of every city. You know, let's have the housewives of Cleveland. Let's have the housewives of Santee. Let's have the housewives of Beverly Hills. Let's have reality surviving shows. Reality, you know, let's throw people in a home and see if they can live together. Let's, you know, all these reality shows, but nobody really truly wants to look at the reality. So here's something that I love. Again, these men gave an honest report, and Nehemiah listened. And we're going to see that he responded to the report that was given. Now, here's the other thing that's important. Here's the other challenge for you tonight. When a report is given, we have to, number one, first off, take it into prayer. And we're going to see Nehemiah do that. We've got to take it to the Lord, and we got to say these things. Lord, if there is any truth to this report, if there's any truth to maybe this confrontation or any truth to what's been told to me, and it could be about ourselves, it could be about someone else, could be about a situation, it could be somebody trying to warn us or stop us from making a bad choice or bad investment, or maybe it's somebody stopping us from dating the wrong woman. Don't date her. Don't do it. You're going to regret it. We got to first stop it. We got to stop, listen to it, but then immediately give it to the Lord and ask God to show us, what do you want to show me through this, Lord? What do you want to show me? And then when he shows us, we need to respond. So here's the most dangerous place we can be in. Somebody that we love, respect, maybe they come, they give us an honest report, and we close our ear to it and we ignore it. But when we get a report like this, like Nehemiah gets, we should flip the alarm off and sound off the alarm and say, I got to do something. You know, I'll share this with you. I'm always blown away. Here, we have an amazing high school here at Horizon, but I'm always blown away by this. I get parents, this happens, and if some of you are in this room, I apologize for, I'm not going to mention any names, but that will come and say, hey, I know that there's kids doing this at the school, and I know who they are, but I'm not going to tell you who they are. Because I don't want my kids to get in trouble, and I don't want my kids to be a part of this. But I'm just telling you so you know. Great, thanks for my comment. Thanks for nothing. Really, thanks for nothing. So you want to teach your kids not to stand up for righteousness and to just talk about it and not do anything about it. Now, me as a parent, and maybe I would feel the same way if my kid was involved in it, but I hope that I could tell my kid, you know what, if you lose 10, 20 friends because of this, because of standing up for what's right, then you're going to truly learn who your friends are. And if those people stop liking you, stop hanging out with you, stop talking to you, they were never your friends to begin with if they decide not to associate with you because you stood up for what was right. So we need to, as men, to be able to sound the alarm. Something's wrong. This isn't right. We need to stand up for that and be bold in that. So the report comes, and listen to this, verse 4. Remember, he asked. So we got to remember that as well. When we ask and put ourselves out there, we got to be prepared and prayed up. Because when you ask, sometimes, you know, if we're not people that ask on a regular basis, hey, how am I doing? Have you noticed anything about my walk with the Lord or how I am as a dad or how I am as a husband or how I am as a businessman? If we don't do that on a regular basis and all of a sudden you're going to try to do it, be prepared. Some people might not want to say anything, but some might say, oh, I have been waiting for a long, long time. And I'll be honest, it's happened to me in that way, where it's like I open the door and it's a door that I wish, gosh, why did I ever do this? You know, this hurts. This is uncomfortable. So be prepared. You know, be prepared. But here we see this. As soon as he heard these words, it says, I sat down. He hears the words of what the state is, the report is given, and it physically moves him to sit down. Now, I think, this is just me, I don't think Nehemiah went up and grabbed a chair and pulled it out slowly and then slowly sat down. I picture Nehemiah hearing these words and falling over. And I picture him physically being affected because of the report he hears and because of the situation and the condition that the city is in, but also the condition that his people are in. I think he was physically moved, and we see not only did he sit down, but then he wept and he mourned. I love this because we've just been going through the Beatitudes, and if you remember, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Anybody? Pop quiz, does anybody know what the name Nehemiah means? What was that? God is my comfort. Pretty amazing. Here he is in a place of physically being moved, mourning, weeping. He finds himself in a terrible situation. We are, when we, the body of Christ, we know this, the New Testament tells us that when one suffers, we all suffer. He literally finds himself in a place, in a terrible place, because his brothers are in a terrible place. And he starts to mourn, and he starts to weep. But here's what's so important. Verse 2, again, remember he asked. So here's something that's important to note about Nehemiah. He actually cared about people. To the point of where he asked and inquired. Now, sometimes, I'll be honest with you, we as men can be shallow and we can maybe not care about other people and not care about what's going on other than in our own lives. And when we say, hey, how you doing? I don't know about you. I'll be honest with you. There's times where I ask that question and I'm kind of just asking it to ask it to cover my bases. And I'm a little afraid of what's going to come back when we ask somebody how they're doing. But we need to be men that when we ask, how are you doing? That when the report comes, if it is something of this magnitude, that we would sit down, and we would stop, and we would actually listen, and that we would respond to the report that is given. I want to share just kind of this picture, and this happens a lot with when you work in this kind of field, but I've been on a lot of ride-alongs with police officers, and my first call that I went on that was a SIDS, a baby death, which was probably the hardest call that I'd ever gone on. And I remember we were the first two there. I got out of the car with the police officer. We went into the house, and he immediately started administering CPR. And, you know, 3 minutes later, the fire department pulled up, and they came in and took over and ended up taking the baby and to the hospital. And we waited in that house, and it was a babysitter, friend of mom's, that was watching the baby when this happened. And we had to stand, and we waited in the house for almost 7 hours for a detective to arrive. And anytime there's a SIDS death, usually a detective is assigned to come and find out what happened And we stood there for 7 hours. I remember after hour one, I just wanted to sit down. I was tired, and I remember looking at that police officer and saying, okay, if he's not sitting down, I'm not sitting down. So I stood, and we stood there for 7 hours, and after we finally were able to leave, we got in the car, and I said, how are you? And this was the response I got. Oh, I'm completely fine. Those kind of things don't affect me at all. They don't affect me at all. And I just listened to him. You know, my wife's a nurse, and she works with babies, and this kind of stuff doesn't affect me at all. And as we drove along for the rest of the night, I just kept thinking, maybe it's not going to affect you right now, but in a month, 5 years, 10 years, it's going to hit you. And it's going to build up and build up and build up. And naturally, I think as men, we are told that we have to have this tough exterior so that we don't let anything in to mess with our emotions. And we need to be tough and not let it affect us. Just last week, was driving up to Costa Mesa and dropped my oldest son Cole off here at school, was getting in the car, my phone rang, and it was the Harbor Police, and they said, we need you to, can you come downtown? And I asked him what was going on, and somebody downtown off of a parking structure, a homeless man, decided to jump. And my first thought was, I need to go to Costa Mesa, I can't go, and the Lord just said, you need to go. And I pulled up, and this guy jumps, and two women right there, parking structure, they're right there in the ACE parking lot booth, and he lands literally 5 feet from the booth. And I remember pulling up, get out, you know, he's laying there in the street, and there's a yellow tarp over him, and first thing out of the cop's mouth, because they know when a chaplain comes that they kind of associate us with shrinks, you know, here comes a chaplain, and they're going to pry into my life, and first thing out of his mouth is, just so you know, this, I didn't know the guy, so it doesn't affect me at all. Doesn't affect me at all. I didn't know him, and he said, you know what, to be honest with you, if it's a baby and it's somebody I know, it will affect me, but I didn't know this guy, so it doesn't affect me at all. And I stood there for about 20 minutes with this cop, and as I continued to look at this, you know, the body there covered, I started to feel like, you know what, could I get to the place where I would let this not affect me? And yes, you have to. I know this for a fact. You have to in that type of environment and in that type of career. There are times you have to go into mode where, hey, you know what? I can't let it affect me right now. I can't let it affect me. But it is so important to not get to a place where we do not let a report like this affect us. That we don't find ourselves in a place that I didn't know him, so it doesn't affect me, but that we would always be in a place where that's another human being. That's another soul. Just like Santino, the chaplain, said, you know, his heart was, hey, if I'm not faithful to be a chaplain, this role is the matter of heaven and hell for some. It's a matter of souls. And he's saying, if I'm not faithful to that, one soul, you know, and when we see one soul perish, we should be affected by it. So he was so affected that he not only fell back in his recliner chair, I don't think he had a recliner chair, but he sat down, and we find him weeping and mourning. And as we wrap up, here's some key things in his state of mourning. Notice this. He did not stay in this state of mourning. Now, this could happen. He could say, you know what? I am so depressed and so moved by this that all I can do is start to drink and not go out of my house and start to get angry and bitter at God. But his response is, he starts to pray, and he starts to fast. So he knows this. We see right off the bat that Nehemiah knew where he had to go with his mourning and who he had to beseech in order to help his people. He was a man that was moved to prayer and fasting. And again, when we find ourselves hearing the report and seeing what's going on, we need to ask ourselves, are we men that will be quick to pray? So tonight, we're going to close up with this. Turn with me to Acts chapter 12, because I want to talk about prayer a little bit. And honestly, in this room, how many would you say, honestly, we're all men, we're not going to beat each other up. How many of you would say that you don't have the most amazing prayer life? Okay, a lot of us. So I want to, if you have a smartphone, I want to encourage you. There is an app, it's called Echo, E-C-H-O. It's an awesome little app, and all it's for is prayer. You create a prayer list. It has actually a built-in timer for it. You can say, you know what, I want to pray for these 10 things that I've put in, and I want to pray for each of those for 60 seconds or for 30 seconds each, and it'll start it off, and it'll give you a little strum or play a bell that will tell you, okay, it's time to pray for the next thing, and it will take you through. And it is, for me, when I go to prayer, I honestly, it is a time where I need to get ready even to go into prayer, because if I just try to stop in the middle of the day, and I'm good at those shotgun prayers where it's like, Lord, this is going on, I pray for right now. But if I'm going to sit down and stop and pray, I've got to prepare myself, and I've got to say, okay, I'm going into prayer, and I'm going to spend some time doing this, and I need to be focused in it, or it's going to be kind of this turn, you know, running in circles of, okay, did I already pray for that? I'm getting bored of praying for this. Lord, I prayed for this and getting into a place that we're purposeful in our prayer. And Nehemiah was purposeful in his prayer. He had structure to his prayer. He laid it out. He first acknowledged who God was. Then he went into immediate confession. And then after that, he went into the request. But even before the request, he actually went into the process of, and you probably saw this in your homework, the process of reminding God of who he was and what he had promised. And I love that. In prayer, it's not that we're telling God, hey, I think you forgot, but it's telling God that we know who he is. God never forgets his promises. We know that. But when we, in prayer, say, hey, God, I know that you've done this before, and I know you can do it again. I know this is your character. I know this; these are your attributes. It is telling God that we know who he is, and that is why we're coming to him. And I think God loves that, when his people remind him that we know of him, and we know about him, and we know what type of God he is, and what he's done before. And I think he eats that stuff up, because it's his children saying, I know you, Dad. I know you. This is who you are and who you've always been. And that's why I'm calling out to you. So he's purposeful in his prayer, but here's what I want to encourage you. I want to encourage you, as we go through the book of Nehemiah, we're going to this chapter one, here's the challenge is really, one, when we get the report, what are we going to do about it? And we see this example, if he immediately goes into prayer, and we know that Nehemiah obviously was a man of prayer, and he also was a man that fasted. And he was a man that took prayer very seriously. And I want to read you this little story in Acts chapter 12, and it's not just a little story, it's an amazing story. But I was reading through this, and it really challenged me to ask myself an important question that we're going to see in here. And listen to this story about Peter being imprisoned. Acts chapter 12, verse 1. About that time, Herod the king laid violent hands on some who belonged to the church. He killed James, the brother of John, with the sword, and when he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded to arrest Peter also. This was during the days of unleavened bread, and when he had seized him, he put him in prison, delivering him over to four squads of soldiers to guard him. Four squads of soldiers to guard this one guy, intending after the Passover to bring him out to the people. So Peter was kept in prison, listen to this, verse 5, but earnest prayer for him was made to God by the church. Not just prayer, earnest. And I'm not talking about Ernest, who was in the old films, Ernest Goes to Camp, or never mind, those are horrible movies. But by the way, do you all know it's Back to the Future Day? Okay, if you don't know what that is, this is the day that in Back to the Future they went to back in the future. October 21st, 2015. So if you want to go online, you can actually look at the things in Back to the Future they said would be, that they had there in the future, and most of those are here. It's pretty crazy. I think they, so hoverboard. I just got one last night. But so not just prayer was made, but the church made earnest prayer for Peter. Okay, Peter, modern day, Saeed. Okay? Saeed's in jail for the very same reason Peter was in jail. The church around the world is making earnest prayer for Saeed, and we have been for 3 years now. And here we see the church, not only did they just pray, but they were earnest in their prayer, specifically for Peter. Now listen to this, verse 6. Now when Herod was about to bring him out, on that very night, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and sentries before the door were guarding the prison. And behold, an angel of the Lord stood next to him, and a light shone in the cell. He struck Peter on the side and woke him, saying, "Get up quickly." And the chains fell off his hands. And the angel said to him, "Dress yourself." That's very important. If you're going to run from jail, make sure you're dressed. You don't want to run from jail naked. But he says, "Dress yourself." And he does, and he puts his sandals on, and he did so, and he said to him, wrap your cloak around you and follow me. And he went out and followed him. He did not know that what was being done by the angel was real, but thought he was seeing a vision. Verse 10, when they had passed the first and the second guard, they came to the iron gate leading into the city. It opened for them on its own accord. And they went out and went along one street, and immediately the angel left him. And when Peter came to himself, he said, now I am sure that the Lord has sent his angel and rescued me from the hand of Herod and from all that the Jewish people were expecting. When he realized this, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose other name was Mark, where many were gathered together and were praying. Again, the church was making earnest prayer. The church, these people, were actually gathered praying for Peter, the very house he is now going to. They are in there, inside, praying for him. So it's like us on a Sunday night if we're gathering for prayer for Saeed, and imagine we're praying, and all of a sudden Saeed knocks on the gym doors. Hey guys, I'm outside. While we're praying for him, listen to this. Verse 13. And when he knocked at the door of the gateway, a servant girl named Rhoda came to answer. Recognizing Peter's voice, in her joy, she did not open the gate, but ran in and reported that Peter was standing at the gate. They said to her, you are out of your mind. But she kept insisting that it was so, and they kept saying, it is an angel. But Peter continued knocking, and when they opened the door, they saw him and were amazed. So here's what's crazy. They were making earnest prayer for Peter to be released. He's released in the midst of while they're praying and brought straight to the very door of where they're at, gathered together. Rhoda, this young girl, hears him at the door, knows it's him at the gate, and in excitement just leaves him there. Peter's probably thinking, I've been in prison, you're not going to even open the door for me. You know, what kind of hospitality is this? But she runs in, and she's, the guy we're praying for is at the door. He's here. He's been freed. You've lost your mind. You've lost your mind. You're a young, naive little girl. You've lost your mind. And she insists, and finally they go and they see it's Peter, and they're amazed. I want to challenge you as men, and this might sound weird, but start to pray for God to do things and for God to work in ways that when you tell people what you're praying for, they would say, you've lost your mind. There's no way God could do that. There's no way God could do that in your life or in your wife's life or in your son's life or daughter's life or in your brother or sister's life or in those that you work with. There's no way God could do that. There's no way God could provide for that. You have lost your mind. Be men of prayer that would pray prayers that would cause people to say, are you crazy? You want to see, you think God can do that? I want to share this example with you. Many of you that go to church here, you know that we're soon to be homeless in the next 2 years. So we're going to get sleeping bags and we'll be on the streets. No, but we are in 2 years. Our lease is up here at this campus. Some of you know that. We are looking for the next place to go to. And this campus has been purchased by another school. They already have plans to come in and do about $12 million of renovations. And the wheels are in motion and they have grandiose plans, but I, from the beginning, have been praying, God, I don't want to leave. Let us stay. And just in the last few weeks, God has challenged me to specifically start praying, stop the wheels that are in motion and turn them in a different direction. And I share with a few people here and there that, hey, I'm praying specifically that something would happen so that we could stay here, because I want to stay here. That's my prayer. That's what I want. But we're looking. We're still searching. We're not being foolish. We're not just sitting here saying we're going to stay here. But honestly, the response I get from a lot of people are, you kind of aren't thinking level-headed, you know, and you got to let go of this place. You have too much emotional attachment. You got to let go because you've been here your whole life and grown up here. Just let go of it. Because maybe we're not to be here. And I say, you know what? That could be the Lord. And I have let go. God, if you want us to go somewhere else, reveal it. But I would love to stay here, God. And I want to see you do a miracle that people would say, you've lost your mind. There's no way. They've already bought it. They own it. They've already got plans. But I know my God is big and my God can do amazing things. So Nehemiah responds by prayer and fasting. And I want to challenge you. We're going to leave here in the next couple minutes. We're going to go to our groups. And I want to challenge you this week, start praying for the very things that people may say, I think you might be off your rocker. Are you on something? Honestly, that might sound weird. My wife and I, we had twins, and quickly into our pregnancy, we found out that one of the twins had major issues with his kidneys. And I remember at one point, we were going to probably during the pregnancy, at one time, I think we were going to 8 different doctors. We go to this doctor, that doctor, this doctor, this doctor, go over here. And one of the doctors every week would say, you know what, there's no hope. The next week he'd say, you know what, I think we can do surgery within the womb. The next week there's no hope. And we just kept, Lord, praying and praying and praying and praying. And I remember this doctor pulled us into his office, and he was completely serious, and he sat us down, and he said, I just have to ask both of you one question. Are you on drugs? And I said, no, why? He said, because I do not understand why you're able to say the way you are through all of this, that you're not freaking out, or you're not mad at me, or you're not angry every week, or you're not, you know, coming in weeping and bawling every time you come in here. And we were able to tell him, we are on kind of a drug, yes. And it's dependency, full dependency. I'm dependent upon it. And it's God Almighty. And we want to be people of like, that people would say, how are you able to do that? How are you able to stay calm and stay joyful? How are you able to function? And honestly, I wouldn't be able to wake up in the morning if it weren't for God. I wouldn't be able to function. And he is so faithful. So be men. I want to challenge you as we go through this series. We're just taking a little glimpse tonight, just at the start of his prayer life. But I love this story of, you know, we're earnestly praying for something, and then when it actually happens, we're like, no, that couldn't happen. There's no way. Well, we just spent hours praying about it. Maybe God actually hears our prayers and answers our prayers. But sometimes we can become these men of prayer that, you know, I'll pray for it, but I don't think God's going to ever really do anything about it. And then he's working right there doing it, and we say, are you an idiot, little girl? There's no way. Peter's got 2 guards chained to him, and he's got multiple gates, and there's no way he's getting out. And there he is. So my challenge to you, be men that are not afraid to get the full report and respond by going to God in prayer. And be men that would pray for things and pray for people that people's response would be, there's no way. And you can say, still going to do it, still going to trust, still going to seek him. And I'll be honest with you, God may take us somewhere else, and I'm okay with that. And I might look like an idiot for saying, I'm praying for this and only for this, but I would rather fall flat on my face and look like an idiot knowing that I continue to seek the Lord and trust God. And if that's what we have to do, we have to do it. So he is faithful.